Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Martin Churchhouse, CEO of Carus Minerals, and Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Besant Resources. Welcome. How are you today, gentlemen?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Phil.
Thank you very much. Very good.
Excellent. So last week you announced a JV agreement together. Do you want to tell us a bit more about what that actually means for both companies going forward?
Yeah, sure. I think just taking a step backwards, just for those people that don't know much about us, our projects are Cyprus-based. We've been there now for just over 12 months, really, on the ground. We're very happy with progress. We're making a lot of friends in Cyprus. It's all going well. It's a decent jurisdiction. And our focus has been on brownfield sites where you've got former producing mines, principally because we wanted access not only to the dumps that we know existed there, but also because it effectively means that we're in areas that we know are prospective. Otherwise, yeah, there wouldn't be mines there in the first place. Once we got started, we realized that there were still plenty of other opportunities. And I think since the last time I spoke to you, we've actually probably just more than doubled the total number of licenses that we hold. And that has actually created multiple additional projects and opportunities potentially, which we're now starting to look at. And it was basically on the back of that, you know, we started talking to both Besant and Jubilee some time ago. And that was one of the reasons why Jubilee sort of came in the first instance, was because we had potentially a lot of dump resources that can be reprocessed. And we recognized that we needed some specific skills and things in order to achieve that. With regard to the Besant story now, but with regard to the recent Jubilee announcement and the extension of the option agreement, the basis behind that is sort of twofold. One, we're progressing at speed now with the detailed evaluation of the Trulli project. And you may have seen today that an announcement was put out by Jubilee, which I must say was actually, you know, we're delighted with it. It was very complimentary of the projects that we've got. And it did highlight the fact that all efforts are being made to try and conclude the first joint venture with Jubilee during Q1 next year. So that's going well. Part of the reason for the need for the extension, of course, is that because we've doubled the number of licenses and we've got significantly more projects on our books now, we need to give our partners the additional time in order to do the necessary work, background work, in order to decide whether there's anything of merit there. And of course, we've got to do the drilling and we've got to do the sampling, deliver all that material to them for their analysis. So that extra 18 months gives us the capacity to service our partner and give them all the material that they need and all the information to look at the other projects, whilst at the same time, their primary focus right now is on the Trulli project. With Besant, yeah, we're delighted that we're up and running now on that project. We've got Besant representatives coming back into the country next week, accompanied by the Jubilee engineers. You know, we followed Besant for some time. We know their skills and their capabilities, and they're extremely well connected. And we really like the whole small miner concept. You know, we were looking for some time for a partner to assist us with the mining side of our project development, and Besant was our partner of choice. And you know, everything that we've seen so far, the discussions we've had, the sort of the high level work that's being done, looking at financing and construction and how we're going to develop and phase the various projects in, is all very encouraging. And it clearly showed to us that there's a skill set there and a level of expertise that we can tap into. So yeah, we're delighted with the situation. We're very happy that, you know, Jubilee's extended their option and they're now starting to ramp up their work on the Truly project. And of course, that works in perfectly in terms of timing with the signing of the joint venture with Bazant, and then providing extra funding, which means that we can speed up the drilling, get all the mineral resource estimation and other work done that much quicker, so that, you know, we're in a position to hopefully make a production decision in the not too distant future.
That sounds promising. And Colin, your input?
Well, my input is fairly consistent. I've spent a kind of a post working, you know, working for the company's career with a, you know, I've always set off with the three P's. And the three P's being places, people, and projects. So I guess let's talk about places. And Cyprus, you know, I visited in 1998. And I have to admit, it got the better of me. I couldn't quite figure out why there were so many opportunities languishing, if you like. And looked around the lot and decided, you know, I'd go elsewhere and went elsewhere, but left with a nagging interest. So Cyprus, you know, and then, of course, it's gone on stakes since then in terms of, you know, the civil war and the division of the country and the way the mines were allocated, the way the mining licenses were managed and structured. A lot has changed. And so one was able to get closer to it on recent visits. So place, it certainly ticks that box. Projects, well, the project's quite mind-boggling, really. All of them have got their own legs. On this last visit, I saw a commonality coming through. I actually satisfied myself why such good assets could remain untested for so long. And I think the mining there in Cyprus has been very family-driven. Has been so much so that, you know, villages are named after mines and mines are named after villages, and whichever came first. But it seems to me there was no great ambition to make things bigger, no great ambition to join up with the village across the road there. Everybody did their own thing. And of course, you know, the average grade, you know, I think I've met on many platforms have talked about the average grade dropping from 1.13 down to about 0.62 as we are now over 15 years. When in the days that Cyprus were working, waste, 1.25-1.5% copper might have been put on the waste dump. So I'm very comfortable now with the projects. I understand them. I understand the multiple complexity as well, that, you know, you've got oxide gold, you've got sulfides, you've got oxide copper, you've got mixed oxide and sulfides, and copper and gold. So it's very intriguing. And I can speak for Jubilee, of course, and that's right up their street. Jubilee doesn't go out looking for challenges. It goes out looking for places it can make money. But nobody can walk away from the sort of grades which are in those dumps. And since people have looked at those dumps, you know, there's been so many advances in treating multi-sulfides, transition zones, sulfides, oxides. And there's a story developing, which I think is right up their street. And as Martin says, the expertise is going out there next week to not kick the tires. The tires have been nicely kicked and they bounce quite well. So nobody's kicking tires. We're actually moving into detail and we're moving into directing the testing towards a vision that Jubilee might have, towards a methodology that Jubilee might employ on multi-situations, i.e. where you work in dumps, you're working in situ, you work in copper, you work in gold, and you don't want to invent a plant for every single story. You know, you're trying to get a plant what fits the total bill. That we can do and that we've done. So that's projects. The projects, I think, are absolutely superb. Places and then people. That's the last one. And I've watched Martin and Mike over the last couple of years and talked to friends in the city. And, you know, they are very well regarded. And they're regarded for honesty. They're regarded for tenacity, i.e. that they set on a mission and don't give up. And it's easy to say, oh, well, they've got a nice bag of tricks out there in Cyprus. But boy, it's easy to say, but it's a lot less easy to do. To embark upon a mission, to get to the project numbers that they've got, to get the, you know, I went round with Martin in these villages and to see some of the people and the respect which has been built up with mayors and local dignitaries and local businessmen for that match, and even the churches. It's admirable. So I've got three ticks on my box and one's got camp people, place and projects. So that's why I asked the board of Bazant to first of all enter into the option agreement, and secondly, it was no great difficulty to go back to the board and say, look, I think we've found a project what's going to work here, the Truly project. Let's go into the first joint venture. So that's my take on the joint venture. I'm delighted to be part of it. I'm excited about where we might be. And of course, you know, the copper space is the copper space. I think people are probably fed up with my story on copper, but in terms of Cyprus, hopefully I've covered why.
Say it again, Colin. Cyrus. Say we need copper.
Yeah, we do. We sure do.
So, Colin, tell me this. Do you envisage almost like a conglomerate here with yourself and Cyrus and Jubilee all working truly together?
Mentally, I'm in production already. That's not a good, probably not a good thing, but I can see the opportunities so clearly. Mentally, I'm in production. The one thing about Truly, not by design, I have to say, but by the way it seems to be panning out, you've got a complementary situation. You've got in-situ material, you've got dumps. As I say, the plants, common purpose plants, are not as easy, not as difficult to design as they might have been 10 or 15 years ago. So yes, I can see it emerging that way, because there's enough in-situ to fill the plant, there's enough dumps to fill the plant, and I don't think we need to purpose design peripheral activities where we try and differentially get the gold, for example, or parts of the ball body won't be able to fit in the same plan. I honestly don't think that will be the case. I don't think that will be the case. And, you know, what I'm really attracted about is that this, it's the dump. So the dumps and tailings, and so one can mine them. And it's not as though you've either got to go and start an underground. You might do that, who knows. But immediately in front of us, according to the drilling I've seen, we're waiting for the results. But from the evidence I'm seeing, we're talking about battering back an open pit and taking the deeper levels. Now think about that. You know, that's not starting from ground zero. That essentially is you're starting off with a pit where you're actually walking on top of the next lift. Safety says you've got to batter it back. You can't just go digging yourself, you know, back to my little knee operation. You can't do keyhole surgery on an open pit. It's big, and yeah. So you've got to batter back.
Not only that, Colin, you're also talking about this open pit could go another kilometer towards the direction of the strike. You know, if the strike is
That's a real ambition. That's a real ambition. But as I sit and look at it now, you know, that we've got a dump, I don't know, 2.5 million tons between them. We've got 60 meters of depth ready for digging. Safety says, as I say, bring in the contractors, battery bike. We've got a gold cap. We've got sulfides and stock works under the gold. So if I don't want to call it a dream, but if nothing else happens, there's a mine, there's our first small mine there, it just nothing else happens. Do I think the two will join up? I think they'll join up and you can see the sequence developing, you can see the line, you can see the trend, all that will happen, I think, but that might have taken a lot of time. But I think to get this mine in production, we're talking about crushers, flotation plants, we're talking about the right reagents. And so it's not going to be the death of the thousand lashes before we're in production. So I think that the testing out the theory, does it all join up? It's sequential as opposed to concurrent. We've got a mind, I don't know, I don't want to flash figures out that I can't support, but if you start talking about 5 or 6 million tons between dumps and primary, just think about it. There's 12 years at 500,000 tons a year. There's money for Jubilee, there's money for us, and there's money for carers. So does it join up? Then, well, if it does, by Jove, you develop quite a big proposition.
If it joins up, you're going to need a much bigger plant.
If it joins up, you're probably looking at a totally different operation. You could, let's face it, you made a lot of money. The plant's been paid for. You might decide to continue at the same rate and have a mine what lasts 20 years instead of 10. Who knows? But, I don't want to actually speculate beyond the fact that my comfort level says, and one's, that we live in impatient times, and our expectations on stock markets. And I should be very comfortable in about February next year. We can turn around and say, well, look, folks, we know what the process is going to be looking like. This is how many million tons we've got of in-situ material and dump material. This is how we're going to treat it. This is going to be the capital cost. This is going to be the off cost. And we're going to produce 8,000 to 9,000 tons of copper a year. That's the sort of story I want to be telling in February.
The interesting thing there, Colin, the point that I think maybe people don't appreciate, which reflects on our decision, Kerris's decision to go with the joint venture and working with Jubilee, is that we are dealing with multiple different ore types at the one location. And we're doing the evaluation, we're unwinding the historic work that was done and trying to figure out what's been dumped where. Now, clearly, as there wasn't a huge amount of mining done before everything had to stop with the invasion, the guys that were there, they were taking the highest grade ore, which was, in the 4-5% type range. So all the lower grade, 1-1.5, all of the siliceous material that they didn't want to put through the plants, all of the oxide gold, all of the oxides, that's all littered all the way around the site. Now, we're starting to unwind everything and figure out where all these bits and pieces are. But the beauty of the joint venture and the work that we're doing with Jubilee and yourselves is that we're not having to think about separate plants for oxides, separate plants for gold oxides, something else for the sulfides. The skill levels and the skill sets are there for us to be able to not have to worry and concern ourselves about that. We can go in there, we can prove up as many tons as we can at the highest grade possible, knowing that somebody is going to have a solution for us to be able to process everything. And where that becomes really pertinent is that we've got a lot of material there that is, we've got a huge range in terms of grade. And the expertise that comes with the plant design and its future operation means that we'll get the very best out of all of those materials. I mean, I'm looking at some of our dumps where we've got horizons there that are consistently running at 6 to 15% copper. Now, how many people are talking about 6 to 15% copper grades these days? Now, admittedly, it's with an XRF, so, we need to do the assays, but I'm very confident the grades will be similar. But I need to know that I've got somebody who's batting for me or batting with us that will get the absolute maximum out of that 15% in that horizon, and it doesn't get wasted. And that for me is a key part of this whole relationship that's sort of evolving. I'm confident that I can throw any kind of ore at the plant that we're going to have, and that it'll be able to to produce copper and gold.
Very good.
How do you guys envisage this going forward in terms of timescale? Colin's talking about February. We will have, maybe by February, we will have resource figures. We will know how much is there, hopefully. Is that what you're thinking, Martin, as well?
Look, we'll certainly, we've got engineers arriving next week. We've got the Bazant team arriving next week as well. I'm hoping by the time everybody leaves at some point in early December that we will at least have a conceptual design that the guys can go back to Jubilee and you know, work up something concrete in terms of an actual design, a strategy. And as Colin was saying, we can then look at scheduling and tonnage and the capex and everything else. We've currently got in excess of equivalent of 1,400 meters, about 1.5 kilometers of core equivalent sitting in the laboratories, waiting for assay results. We've got a new geological engineering company that is primed and ready to go to complete independent mineral resource assessment work for us as soon as we get all that assay data back. So yeah, there's, you know, we're marching ahead. I see no reason why we shouldn't be in a position during Q1 to be able to get sufficient handle on a resource in terms of tonnage and grade and the sort of the general characteristics of the mineralization. And for Jubilee to be in a position to have suggested a particular design that we're then at a level where we've got enough information to be able to, you know, put together a project and get started.
And in terms of the market, when would we expect to see some of the assay results?
It's the same problem that everybody's facing. I talked to other companies. Everybody's in the same boat at the moment. You know, we're even trying fast tracking samples, and it doesn't seem to be making too much difference. But we should be. I'd be very disappointed if we haven't got assays back within, you know, the next week or so. Not the whole lot, but certainly a significant number.
Okay, so we should be getting some results in the next in November, hopefully.
Yeah, I would hope so. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, there's not much we can do. We've started to reduce the size of the batches that we send to try and sort of accommodate the labs and things. But, you know, there's a lot of people sending a lot of samples at the moment. So we're in the queue.
Yeah. Same as everybody else. So, yeah. Colin, if you're telling me that you're looking at this joint venture and hopefully 8,000-9,000 tons of copper coming in the not too distant future, however long that is, we really don't know. What other joint ventures do you see are possible on Cyprus?
And this is a good question. You know, you sort of takes you into next generation, doesn't it? It's all about resource allocation. And we decided right at the outset, Martin and I, we would have a league table. And, you know, we're still in the learning curve, but we'll be taught a lot by this, by the mineralogical assessments, by the actual testing, flow sheet testing, laboratory testing of the ore types. But I don't think you can actually sit there and say, right, heads down, folks, we're going to get truly going, because that's not what Cyprus wants. That's not what the investors want. We want to see action. So I think that when we beginning to, and Peter will pay Paul too, as we learn more and more truly, we'll be able to take that into the other projects. So I suspect in that first quarter, certainly not very far into the second quarter, we'll be identifying project two. Perfection and the ideal world, and I've yet to live in one, says that you find an optimum place for a plant and you can bring one or two of these small projects. And that's all about logistics, roads, staying off public roads, and being able to connect into one, logistically connect into one operation. And we've some ideas Martin and I have there. So it's not work these mines one, you know, in series, you know, because I'll be about 110 and Martin will be about 90. So whatever the difference is between us. So, you know, it's great big learning curve we're going through now. Very progressive learning curve we're going through. What we learn will in actual fact direct us towards, which is the next joint venture. And I've got a suspicion it won't be metallurgy or mining which will drive us. It will be logistics. But that's me thinking forward as one has to. But, you know, when you've got, when you find a copper situation like Martin and his chairman have put together, and a government who's anxious to get jobs, township, villages, what's anxious to get jobs, you're not going to make anybody happy by taking the slowly approach. This is a very, very, to me, our first mine will start the ball rolling, and we've got to keep kicking it.
The other thing to bear in mind, Kevin, is that we've also got quite a few small licenses where we've got some modest size, modest tonnage resources, but we're talking 4 grams gold and 1.5% copper in a couple of 100,000 tons, which is insufficient to sustain a standalone operation. But there's absolutely no reason why we can't go and mine those small deposits and sacrifice a gram of gold or half a gram of gold to get it back to a central plant somewhere. So in addition to somewhere like Calabasas or some of the other sort of high priorities that we're looking at, there are also these little gems that I've spoken about before, which will be, which will make the bottom line look very good.
So are we talking about Anglicides in terms of this as well?
Yeah, quite possibly. And, there are a couple of other licenses where we've got, small tonnages, a couple of 100,000 tons, half a million tons sort of here and there that we should be able to mine, possibly upgrade, and then move somewhere else for treatment. So there's lots of options. And that, sometimes that's a bad thing, but in this case, it's a good thing. And we've been aware of it for some time. We've been talking as a group, by which I mean, Keris, Bazant and Jubilee have been talking for some time about looking at centralized facilities, potentially looking at upgrading and just generally looking at where everything is. So we're aware of what's out there, and it's something that we're constantly sort of working on before we decide on, what's the best route to follow. But yeah, in the meantime, let's crack on with Truly. What we have at Truly now is sufficient to sustain a nice little mine and achieves what we want, the day of the small miner. And then if the drilling, which is imminent to start between Truly and Coquina Petra throws up some numbers, then we can revisit.
Okay, so I'm now going to put you both in a time machine, and you're 1 year on from now. Have we got any revenues?
Yes, I would say so, quite possibly.
I would be very disappointed if we've not got a plan running or we're beginning to run one up. And I wouldn't be surprised at all, because that's the sort of time scale we're on. And remember, you're not talking about box cuts and developing an open cast and pre-strips. It's all there. You're not talking about a dump what doesn't exist. You're talking about a dump and tailings and other secondaries worth about 2.5 million tons.
Yeah. It's great to talk to you both, having been there and seen that literally you just have to stick a digger in there and dig the stuff up and stick it in the plant, So I can envisage it all myself in my head. So, I think practically, if there is revenue generation at the end of 2022, at the very worst case scenario, the beginning of 2023, then our current forward-looking valuations of both Bisant and CMRS are now currently ridiculous.
Well, that's right. We're both micro-caps. And our individual contributions from these projects, this particular project is the first one that truly is enough to sort of re-rate both companies. And notwithstanding, you've got the benefit of production and cash flow, but look at the blue sky. You've got a stack of blue sky, and that's the perfect little emerging metal producer, a company what's got project revenue, surplus of income over expenditure, generating money so we can explore, and plenty to explore. We're not one of those companies who get our first time going and then first mine going and scratch our head wondering what the hell to do next. We've actually got a portfolio of assets all super duper. And as I say, we've got a league table now, and I'm sure that league table in the next few months will rank and re-rank. And I'm also pretty sure, don't hold me against it, Martin, but I'm also pretty sure that the re-ranking will be based more on logistics than can we do it from a mining point of view? Can we do it from a metallurgical process point of view? I think logistics will play a pretty big part in our overall thinking.
Yeah, I mean, generating two companies basically that are both generating quite a few million pounds in revenue, with a lot more to explore on Cyprus, is going to be exciting times for sure. And obviously, you've got the dumps with Jubilee as well, which really, some of those figures you talked about, Martin, in terms of the runoff areas of over 10% copper is crazy. Like, it's nobody talks about that amount. But obviously, those areas have been where the copper has just washed and gone together, because of the way that the waste has been spread on those tables.
It's basically all the sort of the planets align with a lot of these dumps, because we call them dumps, but they are, some of them are actually ore stockpiles. So this is material that had been placed on stockpiles, and it was going to be mined at some point in the future, but it never was. So it was full of sulfides. It sat there for 45 odd years. When there was rain, the water percolated through. It sort of reacted with the sulfide, the pyrite, produced a weak sulfuric acid solution, which then continued to work its way down through the pile and picked up copper on the way through, put it into solution. And then as it gets to the bottom of the heap, it hits material that's got quite a lot of sort of carbonaceous, you know, bits and pieces in it, which causes everything to drop out of solution. So it doesn't, you know, good thing is it doesn't run off into the environment. It's actually fixed there in the horizon. And it's easy to, it's you know, if you look at our website on the project section, there's a little bit called Waste to Revenue, and we put a whole load of photographs in there of this material. It's quite interesting to see. And it's from a future mining and grade control point of view, it's visual mining, it's easy. You can get virtually zero waste if you've got a decent operator picking that material up and moving it to wherever, you know, to the plant. You've got a nice clean subsurface underneath which you can rehabilitate at sort of nominal cost, because Mother Nature and chemistry has actually worked in our favor in this instance. It's not difficult. Where it gets interesting and where the challenge comes in, and where, you know, the expertise that we've sort of acquired, so to speak, comes in, is where we've got highly silicious gold-rich material. Some of which has got no copper in it, some of which has got copper. Some of it has got copper at a percent plus. Some of it is running at 0.3% copper all the way through over quite, you know, significant sort of package widths. And then we've got the high grade, more massive sulfides and the high grade breccias and things. So there's a real mixed bag of mineralization there. I think we've now put a partnership together that will allow us to squeeze every last drop of value out of the dumps and out of the hard rock that we may not have been able to achieve by ourselves.
Colin, one last question. What else is happening at Byzant? Because I know you have a big project, a big copper project there as well. Yeah, What's going on? The Mankayan.
Well, there's Mankayan, and there's the Open Gorup project, of course. We're starting to drill. We've announced we're starting to drill very soon, before the end of November. We promised that to the market. Now, I don't think it seems to have gone over the market's head again that we have 137 kilometers of strike on that matchless copper belt down in Namibia there. And we flew it. I mean, you know, helicopters and flying are normally not in the realms of small companies, of junior companies, but we flew it, and I'm glad we flew it. Anglo failed to fly it, JCI failed to fly it, and so did Goldfields. But we basically dipped our hands into our wallet and we flew it, and we've got great results. The most important result of all has to be proximity, of course. Back to Cyprus, same story. We appear to have a saddle, and the other side of the saddle, the open garrop, is one side of the saddle, and on the other side, we think we've got maritime mineralization. We're going to test that, and if it comes up trumps, we could probably double that tonnage and more. My little personal dream is to find a couple of years of open cut, because it always makes your operations cheaper and get some underway faster. But think about 20 million tons at a couple of percent copper and half a gram of gold. That's serious stuff. When you look at Byzant, the open garrop really has got to be the bee's knees there. That's a real project. York Resource Resources. We're reworking the scoping study, was what was done a few years ago, to put it into current metal prices, current operating cost. Some of the gremlins that were found 10 years ago aren't gremlins anymore, for the very same reason we were talking about earlier, your ability to treat multi-ore types. And that gold, believe it or not, was largely ignored by the likes of Anglo and... think about it, half a gram of gold, you know, that's $30 of rock, pays for all your op costs. So the copper comes for free. So it's a very, very, very nice project. And again, it's in the same ballpark, between 7,000 and 9,000, 10,000 tons of copper per year. So that's that. I'm very happy about that. And then you mentioned Mankind. We put a news release out where we talk about the MPSA. It's basically got to the expiry date. That should not be seen as, oh, they haven't got the license, because it's not a concurrent thing where license has come to an end and that's the end of the road. Invariably, in that jurisdiction, and remember, we're looking for a 25-year position here. The regulators, they look at certain conditions which a company has to satisfy before they grant the 25-year license. And that varies from company to company. I've got my guesses what it might be for our project for Mankind. Hopefully not too onerous, because it's an area where we've done a stack of work, and I think we're fairly well respected in the community. So I'm looking forward to monetizing that one. You know, we've got 27.5%, and whichever way you want to turn this around and sort of question the way things are moving with Mankind, 27.5% of a project with 1.4 million tons of copper and 4.5 million ounces of gold is not a bad position to be, is it? I mean, what is that? I don't know. Roughly 350,000 ton of copper and 1 million ounces of gold. So, you know, attributable to us. So with people who are experts and people who have had considerable success of working in that part of the world. So one should not get despondent about it. It's not like some jurisdictions where a license expires today and is granted tomorrow. It's just not that, just doesn't happen that way in a 25-year grant. It just doesn't happen that way.
Martin's got a lot of experience in Namibia as well, from when I've spoken to him in the past.
I know the projects that Colin is referring to. Yeah, they're very good. Lots of potential. It was a brave thing to fly them, but it looks like it's come up trumps.
Martin Churchhouse and Colin Bird, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Well, it was nice to catch up with him. It's been a few months since we've had a good chat with both Colin Bird and Martin. And so, good to get them finally together, really, now that the JV's been announced.
Yeah, I think getting them together on a podcast was worth a joint venture in itself. No, that was quite incredible organization there. But no, very exciting when you see... I obviously transport them a year ahead, and they both see possible revenues, or at the very least, it's going to be very close to revenues, if not revenues in place. So we're really not a million miles away. And the sort of tonnage Colin was talking about, 8,000-9,000 tons of copper a year. I need to do some maths on that, see how much that's actually worth, because it's probably quite a considerable amount. But yeah, anything happened this week for you so far? It's Wednesday now, so
A couple that I mentioned. I mentioned Bay Capital about 2 weeks ago on the roast. It was actually at the end of the roast when we had Dr. Tom Oakley on from Feedback. And I found this company because I'd invested in this AC8 Ventures. And it's the same. One of the directors is on this board, a guy called David Williams. And the main guy running it, the chairman, is called Peter Tom. And if you do a bit of drilling down into this gentleman, I mentioned it last time, Peter Tom is an 81-year-old who took Breed and Aggregates from a 20-30 million pound company to become a FTSE 250 1.4 billion pound company. And I guess people are buying into it. I mean, it's moved. I think it was the first time I saw it was around about the 16 to 18p mark, and it's just ticking up today to 35, 34, 35 area. So it's literally done. It's done 100% in like 2 weeks. So it's been excellent, especially in this current climate. So that's one that I'm closely watching and sort of just seeing if there's going to be any more. I feel like it's got quite a long way to go, just because there's not much free float, and people are potentially saying it may need to get to the 40 million market cap for institutions to be involved. Whether there's a trigger, there was actually talk within the prospectus about getting it into this 40 million cap area to people to take it seriously, that they can actually RTO into this, because they're really looking for an acquisition in the aggregate space. So it's all down to whether Peter Tom can deliver again and actually get a good acquisition in that space. So very interested. The other one was African Pioneer, and that one's had a nice little tick up this week, tickling around the 3 mark, 2.4 at the beginning of the week, but it's starting to get on people's radars. And I think that there's news due on the license application for the project at the Kalahari Copper Belt. So extremely interesting times on that one with Sandfire Resources in. So that's my one to watch, and really one that I'm just monitoring every day now. Other than that, Feedback's just pootling along at the 1275 mark. So very happy with that as well. But other than that, no, just not much volume on these stocks at the moment.
Yeah, I got two. I'm just going to mention quickly. The first one is Tirupati Graphene was bombing yesterday, 68p, 67p, I think it was. And there looks to be amazing value in that now. I mean, it's only maybe 40, 50% above where it IPO'd. And it's bought another mine. The whole concept really is this graphene combined with aluminium will have the same or similar properties to copper, but 3 times lighter, so be able to be used in aircrafts and all that sort of stuff. So I just see massive value. I think when we had him on a while back, and the broker note was something like £3.90 or something for the shares, if I remember rightly. And they've bounced a bit from yesterday or the day before. They're, I think, 77, 78p now, but the high of the year, 155, I think it was, just seems massively undervalued, like quite a few of the resource sector stocks. And the other one, which I've written a bit of a note on, is Valorix, Val, which I sort of did a bit of a moniker, which was validate academic learning into revenue multiples, which is the analogy of what Valorix does, basically trying to take stuff from our universities and on our best brains in the world in the UK and go through the first stage of assessing a drug, and then doing ventures with biotech companies that can then take on the big costs instead of the lower costs. So, I mean, it's languishing around 31, 32p at the minute, and at less than or thereabouts 20 million pounds for something that probably is funded for the next couple of years, again, seems very strangely valued, especially now they've done the first deal on Val 201, and that's just waiting to be confirmed. So they're the two that I've got my eye on at the minute for recovery and to go even further, I think, with both of them. So yeah, that's me for the week anyway. So, but yeah, it was great to have the two guests, Martin from Keras Minerals and Colin Bird from Besant. And like that project definitely got legs. We've obviously been there because we visited the site and I can envisage exactly what they're talking about. And there is a huge amount of resource there ready to be processed. So yeah, should be exciting times.
Good. Well, on that note, until next time.
Goodbye.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.